Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You are listening to Habsent-Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
All right, it's Habsent-Minded. We're back. We're starting to wind up with a draft with my former boss, Brock Auden of McKean's Hockey. You can find him at Brock Auden. Very simple. Find McKean's at McKean's Hockey as well. Super simple. Follow them. They make an amazing job, and we just spoke about it. Brock, first and foremost, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to enlighten our listeners to this draft.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Patrick.
First and foremost, as I said, we spoke about it a minute ago. The work that has gone into this draft guide is amazing. I know I was part of a little bit of it last year, but it's been a polarizing draft or list to put together this year, right?
Oh, it was so difficult. Probably the most difficult list that I've been a part of putting together. There are so many players all over this draft that the opinions were all over the place on in our scouting staff. The difference between the video scouts, the regional scouts, my assistant director of scouting, Derek Neumeier, myself. Just such a wide variance, and not just like a little bit. Like, we're talking about complete love hate. Like, I love the player, I hate the player, and then trying to find that middle ground so that everybody's happy. I mean, it starts right at the front with Matvei Michkov, who I'm sure is a guy that you're going to want to talk about because he's in that Montreal target range. But our Russian scouts love him. I'm kind of indifferent. I like him. I don't think I love him. Whereas my assistant director of scouting said to me during our meeting or our multiple meetings that he wouldn't even use a top 10 pick on Michkov. He looks at him as Nail Yakupov part two. And then it just kind of goes from there, right? Angel Crystal. There's another guy who, whether you believe the skating can improve to the point where he's a top six player in the NHL, I mean, that's going to dictate whether you think he's a mid first round guy or, you know, a second or third round guy, or as you see him on some, we'll call it more professional lists, like Bob McKenzie's, right, where you're pulling NHL scouts, where he seems to be a lot lower, right? It just feels like there's more guys like that this year than I've ever seen. And it was a very difficult list to put together because of that.
We're all going to have our favorites. We're all going to, I mean, like, I know because I had to struggle with trying to defend someone named Casper last year, but but we're all going to have that. And what I do like with McKean's and from the inside, again, for about, 9 months, but let's be honest, is the fact that it's so wide in your discussion. Really, it's the ceiling is high, but it's also very wide. You let everyone speak, you let everyone give their grades. You have video scouts, as you mentioned. You have the regional scout, as you mentioned as well. And it gives you sort of an insight that there's not only one person that makes the decision. It's first and foremost, quite a few people have watched this player for a bit of time, and second, you let everyone speak, which makes for sort of a communal ranking rather than maybe, as you said, a professional ranking as Bob McKenzie's, where you look into maybe the actual NHL scouts and see what they're thinking. You mentioned it, and obviously this is a Montreal Canadiens pod. And let's be honest, we're going to think that Connor Bedard goes number one. It's you know, let's for just for the sake of it, we'd pick the name and it was him, really. But then it's in a way a toss-up between four players, depending on which one you like most. I've said on plenty of podcasts and with plenty of discussions on Twitter and on forums, that I think MitchCom has the highest potential to be a superstar, but I also think he will fall the furthest. So if you want to start with MitchCom, that's...
Yeah, Patrick, I think that's the perfect assessment, right? There's... of those guys in that four-spot range that you just mentioned, he's unquestionably the biggest wild card. And it's not just the political factor. It's not just, you know, the KHL contract situation. I personally, I think that's overblown. I mean, most of these guys are not going to be really good NHL contributors for 3 to 4 years anyway. I mean, even guys at the front of that draft, you know, they might be in year two or year three of their NHL pathway, but I mean, you're going to get a player when he's coming off that KHL contract who's ready to be an immediate impact guy if all goes according to plan with his development, right? Like
on an entry-level deal. Let's be honest with that.
Entry-level deal. Yeah, exactly. So I think the contract thing is completely overblown. They've said, SKA has said that when he's done, he's done. He'll go to the NHL. Like, there hasn't been anything that's suggested that he's going to extend past those 3 years. So I think that's completely overblown.
And I think something that hasn't really been mentioned enough, I haven't seen it mentioned at all, but enough, is that the assistant coach of SKA in St. Petersburg is Daniel Bochner, who hails from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, come on. It's not like he's going to be out on a whim and not speak to anyone in English, not speak to anyone about the NHL. It's you're going to have a Canadian right in the center of his development, no matter what, more or less.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the bigger concern, obviously, is the political climate thing. I mean, it's very turbulent. We don't know how that's going to end up going in the next few years, right? And there is some inherent risk there. We saw that with the whole Fedotov situation in Philly, right? When they tried to sign him, and there is a little bit of risk there. And when you're picking as high as Montreal is, or as other teams are in that top five range, you know, you've got to weigh that pretty heavily, probably, right? And then just some of the skill set issues, in my opinion, I don't know if I would call them issues, but there are things within his game that I think are going to cause scouts and have caused scouts to pause, right? He's not, of those five guys in the top five, including Bedard, I would say he's not a center. His defensive game is by far, I would say, the weakest of those five. And yes, Will Smith and Bedard aren't terrific in the defensive end either. You know, if you're projecting him as a Nikita Kucherov, it's taken Kucherov a long time to be at least competent as a two-way player. I think the main concern that I've seen from people within my scouting staff and from people that I've talked to is the skating. Everything else is high-end, but you're looking at a guy who's not really the biggest. He's definitely very slight. He's going to have to add strength. And the skating is average for a type of player that's usually taken in the top five, right? If you're taken in the top five, usually you're one of the better skaters in the draft class, right? You're looking at the other guys in that range, and you've got Adam Fantilli, who's, you know, one of, if not the best pure skaters in the draft class, maybe outside of Oliver Moore and maybe a few other guys. Bedard, Will Smith, Leo Carlson, it's not a concern at all. Michkov is definitely the weakest skater of the five, in my opinion.
And especially coming from Russia, because Russia traditionally has been a strong skating country.
Right. And I mean, people compare him to Nikita Kucherov all the time. And we forget that Nikita Kucherov was drafted as low as he was, even coming off of a record-breaking U18 performance, because he wasn't the biggest and because the skating was a bit of a concern, right? And he's ultimately worked out unbelievably well. But how many guys with that same sort of physical tool set haven't worked out, right? And do I bring up Alex Galchenyuk? Yes. The injuries.
Oh my.
I know, right? Why did I do that? Why didn't I just stick with Yakupov? Yeah. Well, because I think Yakupov and Galchenyuk were very different guys, right? I think you'd probably agree, as somebody who's well-versed in all things Montreal Canadiens, outside of the injuries, I think one of the biggest problems with Galchenyuk, other than maybe the hockey sense or IQ not really coming together, was the lack of development in his skating. I think the injuries definitely played a role in that, but that was something that just never really took a step forward after he was drafted. And it's not to say, again, he was never a weak skater, but for the type of player he wanted to be, I felt like it was always something that might have held him back.
As you said, like when you take someone this high as number five or top five, let's go with that. And it's going to be a skater. You know, that's going to be the least of the problem. They could be struggling with a shot. They could be struggling with, you know, hand-eye coordination to a certain degree, but physical game, because you can see them improve or something like that. But two things that normally stands out with top five: hockey IQ and skating. At least from my mind. But you know.
You're 100% right. And those are the two things that you typically look for, right, when you're picking in that range. And the other thing is Michkov's decision-making with the puck and his utilization of his teammates has been something that has been a little bit inconsistent as well. Some people are worried about it. Some people are saying it's overblown just because of the teams that he was playing on. Like, for example, that HK Sochi team that he got loaned to just wasn't very good, right? So, I mean,
well, it's where, let's,
right? Like, let's be honest.
There are two teams that where KHL careers go to die, and one of them is Sochi and the other one is Kulun. Come on, it's a fact.
Right, exactly. So, again, I personally believe those concerns are overblown, but there are enough things surrounding Michkov between the political stuff we just talked about and the on-ice stuff and the projection that I would understand why a team would decide to go with one of those other guys in those top five. Because I do truly believe that all five of those guys are going to be really good NHL players. I don't think you can necessarily go wrong. And I know that the fan bases of those teams have their preferences, right? Just as Montreal fan base has their preference and San Jose and Columbus.
Can Leo Carlson please forward to fifth and make it simple for us? That's what I'm
saying. I figured you would say that. I think personally, it's going to probably be, if any of them falls, it would be Will Smith. Yeah. I can't see Carlson and Fantilli falling to you guys at fifth. I just can't see it. Just with the way that they're projected to play down the middle, with the way that their physical tools are, with the way that they performed at the World Championships, with everything, when you consider the whole scope of it, I can't see them going to five. I think Will Smith, maybe.
I think that's fair. I've said, and I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter because we don't interact that much anymore, but I think the gap between Carlson and Fantilli is really smaller than many think, because
yeah,
they are so,
yeah,
so strong, both of them. I wouldn't be surprised to see Carlson go second. I won't be surprised to see Fantilli go second. It's a toss-up. It's about what you think. I don't think neither of them will need that. You know, Carlson has 4 years of development. You don't need 4 years of development for either of those two guys either. So it's a wash in that case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it's a matter of, okay, if Will Smith does fall because San Jose does something, maybe they pick Michkov, maybe they pick Smith. Maybe San Jose goes off the board and picks somebody like Reinbacher. It shocks us all, because there's a need in that organization for somebody to lead the back end in the future, right? Maybe that happens. The draft is so unpredictable. I mean, we, at this point, if you and I were talking on June 3rd, I wouldn't have told you that Shane Wright would be going to Seattle, right? The draft is unpredictable, and we don't know. I mean, that number four pick could go a variety of different ways depending on what happens. What I see is, I think Montreal is probably going to be choosing between Smith, Michkov, Reinbacher, and then depending on what they want to do, maybe a more of like a physical toolsy guy like a Ryan Leonard or a Dalibor Dvorsky. I think those are probably the guys that the Montreal fan base should hone in on. And I think they have been honing in on, from what I've seen from people like yourself writing, from the comments that I've seen on social media, from mock drafts. Those seem to be the targets. And let's be honest, I think all those guys are going to be great players.
Solid
players. And I think, honestly, I think some of those guys actually fit within Montreal's needs, maybe better than others. I'll bring up a guy like Ryan Leonard. He's somebody that I think is not talked about enough within this draft class.
I know what you're saying, because I've spoken to Chris Peters and he was like, I have him at sixth.
Yeah, like, and he is, when you look at some of these teams that are still in the playoffs, and you look at the kind of players that they have sort of taking point, you look at Florida with Matthew Tkachuk, right? You look at Vegas and the host of guys that they have that play that similar kind of power game, right? Like your Mark Stones, William Carlson's, like those types of strong two-way, high energy, high compete, high skill guys, right? And Ryan Leonard sort of fits that. He is that sort of like Alex Tuck kind of player, obviously with Buffalo now, but you know, that's the kind of projection that he has. And when you look at what Montreal's sort of putting together, right? When you've got guys like Nick Suzuki and you've got Cole Caufield and you've got Slafkovský and these types of players, right? Is there a need for a guy like Ryan Leonard who could be a consistent 70-point, really good complimentary guy who can open up space for Slaf, for Suzuki, for Caufield to be even better than they are currently, right? Is that when I look at Montreal's roster and the way that it's constructed, and I look at what they need to do to take that next step, other than maybe getting a little bit solid or a little bit more solid goaltending, I would say.
You mean finding the next Carey Price again?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Finding the next Carey Price. I think it's a player like Ryan Leonard. So I think that's why he's connected to Montreal so much in mock drafts that I've seen and in different write-ups, because he is that kind of guy. Does he have the kind of upside that Michkov has? No. I feel very confident in saying that. But I think he could be the type of guy that you win in the playoffs with. And I don't know if Michkov is necessarily that guy.
Michkov is the one to fill the fans in the stands, in a way. Like he's he will be that when you cross the red line in the forum, but in the Bell Center, and you're gonna hear the crowd go, "Wow, that is gonna be the guy." I can see him doing those points in regular season, but I can also see him fade out in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that we've seen that with other types of high-skill players, right? And Kucherov is obviously used a lot, but he's kind of a unicorn in that regard, right? I think one of the things that makes him such a good player is he has developed sort of that edge to his game that he doesn't get enough credit for. He's highly, highly competitive. And I know that there has been a lot of talk on Michkov having that same sort of personality where he doesn't like to lose and he's hard on his teammates. And, you know, maybe there's a bit of an edge there in terms of his coachability. Maybe that's the kind of player you want. And Montreal is going to do their due diligence. And again, I can't reiterate enough that I think no matter who they select, even if it's a guy like Dalibor Dvorsky, who I think is probably the guy the Habs fans seem to be wanting the least, the Montreal fans seem to be wanting the least, honestly. I don't know if that's sort of the sense that you're getting, Patrick, but when I talk to Montreal fans and I talk to people on social media, it seems to be like anybody but Dvorsky. And I don't really know why he seems to be the guy that they really don't want, because I think he's a solid player too.
It's probably my fault.
It's definitely your fault. Everything is your fault, Patrick.
Yeah, well. Now, I think Dvorsky is a little bit, you know, he played solid enough in second division Sweden, but when you're used to evaluate prospects from Sweden, you're used to evaluate them out of SHL. So I think that is the conundrum. And then coming on a little bit like Slafkovský, big star of a late tournament in the draft year. I like Dvorsky for a lot of different reasons. The fact that he lived in Sweden for you know almost 6-7 years, learned proper Swedish, learned proper English. You know, it's gonna be so easy to coach him. Then his birthday is a day after mine, so obviously that counts for a lot. Late birthday, that's what I was getting at. But I think for me personally, it's anyone but Reinbacher. So can you enlighten me why Montreal should take Reinbacher?
Well, considering that we have him as the third-ranked defenseman in the class, I don't think I can convince you on that, Patrick. Look, I like Rhinebacker. I just don't think he's Moritz Seider. And I think that a lot of people are making that comparison because he's another big athletic defender from, I mean, we'll call it a non-traditional market, right?
Central Europe, Germany, or whatever you want to call it.
Switzerland, yeah. Austria, all those Central European countries kind of get lumped together as being a little bit more non-traditional. They don't churn out as many top prospects as some of the other nations. And you look at what Rhinebacker did this year in the Swiss League, and yeah, it was incredibly impressive. But I don't see the offensive upside. I think that it's very likely that he becomes a really good second pairing guy, maybe like a really good number four, a decent number three, somebody that, you know, is playing 20 minutes a night for you. But in my opinion, the defense class or the defense group for this draft class is almost starting to get a little bit underrated because people don't see a super high-end impact defender. And I think that there's really good depth. So my issue with taking Rhinebacker that high is I think you're just as likely to take somebody 45th or 50th or 55th or somewhere in that range who's going to have the same kind of impact as David Rhinebacker. That's sort of where I'm at with it. I think that he's very likely to be a good NHL player, but I think that there are some really good defensive guys available in that sort of like early to mid second range, or even later in the first when the Habs are picking 31st. We're going to call it 31st. We'll say 31st, right? There could be some guys in that range who, in my opinion, have similar kind of value to Rhinebacker. So that's sort of my understanding of it all. Our whole scouting team was kind of on board with him being, you know, the third or fourth best defenseman. Even Chava Lenvot, who is our Central European expert, he's one of the best experts in Central European prospects, in my opinion, that's in any of the independent scouting agencies. He is usually the biggest champion of Central European players. And I remember when Moritz Seider was draft eligible, he was like, no, this guy, absolutely legit. Like, we need to have him high. We need to have him high. He's going to be a star. He hasn't really been doing that for Rhinebacker. And it's kind of making me like, okay, so our guy who loves, just bleeds hockey for Central Europe, isn't pounding the table for David Rhinebacker. And in my opinion, that's a little bit concerning in terms of his upside.
To me, there are a couple of things. Zurich, obviously, who's played for, is a system team a little bit. Then that impacts my evaluation of him. Your list is out, so you can't really change it. But that's it. And then I think that his floor is really high because he has bypassed a lot of players already with the floor. The question is, I don't see him getting the same kind of height on his ceiling.
And
I think that's where I'm struggling with Rhinebacker. Obviously, Thomas Rost is one that I am closely affiliated with. And he's not banging the table about Rhinebacker either. So it becomes that kind of... NLA is a good league. Let's be honest with that. It's been very impressive this year. Can he do it on a rainy night in Newcastle or Leeds? Or that's where it comes down to. He will be able to do it, but not on the first pairing. He will be that guy that can move up a couple of games to the first pairing. He will be the guy that, as you say, third, fourth used player on the team, but it's not the go-to guy, the one that you want to lead your offense or your defense in either way. One of the rises with a very strong, and I was surprised as well, and he was off my list, so he's back on it, under 18s, is obviously David Edström. And it's actually Ström. It's not Ström because he doesn't have the O's on it, the dots over the O. So I'm not going to go all everything with umlauts or anything with this one, but he's ranked 31st around that, you know, pick where Montreal has his second their second pick. I really like him. Big year for him. on the verge of breaking into Frölunda that had a crappy year season. If you can say crappy season when you finish in the semifinals of the Champions Hockey League and the semifinals of the SHL and just finished fifth in or sixth in the SHL regular season, that's a crappy year for someone like me, for my team. But yeah. But what can you tell us about Evan Enström? Because he is one that has climbed the list a little bit at the end.
I honestly wanted him higher, and I think that gives you your answer. I wanted him in that like mid to early 20s range, but there were a few people within our scouting team that weren't as high on his upside, which I understand. There is a bit of safeness to him. He's a solid two-way guy, big frame. Maybe there's worry that he's, he's got a lot, but maybe there's worry that he's peaked physically early. Because he
put the same thing I just said about Ryan Pfeiffer is
right, but there's a difference between taking somebody at five who's done that and somebody, you know, in that mid to late first range who looks like he could be a really quality, useful NHL player. And the reason that I like Enström higher and I believe he's actually going to go in that like early 20 range. I really think Enström will be off the board by the time Montreal picks at 31. I think that when you look at his projection as a center, there aren't a lot of prospects who have a clear path to staying down the middle in that first round this year. In my opinion, I think there's a lot of guys who are probably going to have to move to the wing, and I don't see Enström being one of them. I think that with his power game and with his IQ and with his two-way awareness already, he's somebody that's going to stick down the middle. And that has a lot of value. And then when you add in the fact that this is a guy at the beginning of the year who was kind of an afterthought, who was a depth player within, you know, the Swedish international team, was used as sort of like a role player, right? A Swiss Army knife. And then the injury to Felix Nielsen really seemed to open up an opportunity for him to play higher in the lineup. And he ran with it. And he showed that his skill had improved a ton from the beginning of the year, and his confidence in carrying and his confidence in being a playmaker and being a play driver really improved a lot. And I think that there's even more of a runway there. And I think that when you're evaluating players, I think you need to look at those types of things. I really think that they're important. You don't want a player who's stagnant that whole year. I want that guy who has improved. Yeah, maybe that means that there's less runway for improvement later, but at least it's showing that he's putting in the work to get to that next level and take his game to that next level. I think it shows coachability. I think it shows a real understanding of how to improve and to be the player that he needs to be in. I think that you're at least getting a really good third line center. You're getting an Adam Lowry type of player with David Edstrom. And maybe there's a lot more there, right? Maybe there is. And that's why I think teams are going to jump on him. So that's why I really wanted him higher. But again, projection concerns, that's a realistic argument, in my opinion. And it's why he's a little bit lower in the first round on our list, despite my personal preference.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
I'm going to give you, and you have to keep the name you just mentioned in regards to Enström out of it a little bit, and then you can give me maybe two of your personal favorites in this draft for later round picks, or maybe even at five.
Yeah, so the one guy would be Tom Willander. We talked about how, in my opinion, the top defender in this class probably won't be the top guy drafted. I think that this is a group that is very close in ability. And I think that none of the guys in this class strike me as being number one or number two defenseman. I think that you're having to choose from a lot of guys who have a similar projection as maybe like a solid number three. And in my opinion, Willander has the best projection of that. I think that he's somebody that we're kind of sleeping on because he's not as flashy as Sandy Palika. But I think that there's so much value in how he thinks the game and how he processes the game and his overall sort of package as a mobile defender who can play in any situation. And I think that he's somebody who got a lot better over the course of the season too. I think, especially defensively, we saw an increase in his physical intensity and just like a confidence in being able to use his body and not just being a stick on puck defender. Way better defending in traffic, I would say, later in the year as he was earlier in the year. And I think that when you consider that also that within that national team, he had a lot of different partners, especially at the U18s with Wickman getting injured, right? That was sort of a guy that he had been paired with a lot. And then he gets injured and Willander's game doesn't drop. It actually increases to counterbalance that, to counteract that, right? Like now I have to step up my game even more. And I thought he did. And he's somebody that I think has a really safe floor at the NHL level. And that's why if I was picking in that like mid first, he would be somebody that I would be looking at 100%. I think I would wait to pick a defender until I got to that range, and he would be one of my top targets. So he's sort of like number one on one of my personal favorites.
Obviously, a regular guy, regular's development system, fantastic. Right. We've seen it with Seider, we've seen it with Casper, we've seen it with Adam Engström, obviously, and I can understand Montreal fans salivating of having a pairing in SHL that already plays together at that level. Second guy.
Yeah, so the second guy I'm going to give you is probably more of a mid-second guy, but that's Jacob Fowler. He's a goaltender that's kind of lumped in with that group, with Michael Rabel, with Trey Augustine, with Carson Bjarnason, with Adam Guyon. I feel like it's sort of those five as the core top five goalies in this class. Everybody seems to agree on that. It's a matter of what order you place them in. And I think that Fowler is the best of that bunch. And he's somebody he's not as athletic as Rabel. He's not as big as Rabel or Bjarnason. He doesn't have that same pedigree that Augustine did being a player in the National Development Team program. But he was so good this year. And I think that people don't realize how good he was for Youngstown, and especially in the playoffs with helping them win the Clark Cup, which is the USHL finals. He was fantastic at the World Junior A Challenge, which Sweden played at as well. Just anytime I've seen him play, he's just so solid. And I think maybe people are kind of thinking that, okay, this is a guy who's already so technically sound, you know, where is that development going to come from? But I think that as he develops as an athlete and kind of grows into his body a little bit more at the college level, I think that there's a lot of potential for him to develop into the best goalie in this class. So I would say that those two are my sort of two guys that I would pound the table for. Fowler not in the first. I think that you can definitely get him in the second or the third. Especially, I don't expect him to be the first goalie drafted again, because he doesn't have the same athletic tools as some of those other guys that I just mentioned. But he's somebody that I think is going to be a really good prospect, and somebody that when we look back at this draft class 5 years from now, people are going to say, like, you know, why wasn't he the first or second goalie drafted?
You have been banging the table for quite some time. I went back and checked your Twitter feed. I went back and read your articles on McKean's and subscribe if you have the opportunity. Great work by you guys and great work to read and really insightful. Obviously a regular prospect as well, Felix Nilsson. I watched him in Rögle for one of the few games he played at SHL level, and Rögle was atrocious. They lost to a team 7-3, I think it was, at 6-3. I don't remember. But the standout player in that game was Felix Nilsson. A guy you would take at that, you know, maybe 37th, 39 drop where Montreal will be picking with their own pick in the second round. What can you tell us about him? Because he is a little bit of an unknown, partly because of the injuries, partly because under 20 or under 18s and being in that mesh between SHL and under 18s.
Yeah, I think that whoever drafts Nielsen is going to be really happy that he did not play at the U18s. Because I think if he had played at the U18s and didn't get that wrist injury, he would be a first rounder. I do think that he was on that very rapid sort of trajectory, just like David Edstrom. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys had improved so much over the course of the year that I think that he would have had a really good tournament. And I think that people would have been talking about him as a, not a lock for the first round, but definitely a potential first rounder. And I feel like now people, the talk on Nielsen has kind of calmed down a little bit because he didn't play at the U18s, even though he's still a really solid prospect. And what I like about him is he's just a really solid overall player. The IQ is really good, good skater, good projection as a high energy guy, always keeps his feet moving. There are some things within his sort of small area skill that I think will need to improve. You know, you watch him play and there's times where he, you know, he'll fumble a pass or he'll fan on a shot and the play kind of dies on his stick sometimes in the offensive end when he's not able to play with pace when the game slows down. And I think that's something he's going to have to improve on if he wants to be a top six guy and not sort of like a bottom six high energy, you know, F1 kind of guy. But again, here's a guy who I think could stick down the middle, could stick as a center. I think that there's just, again, a really solid floor there, right? And I think that based on what he showed in terms of a progression later in the year, I think that there might be more upside than people are being led to believe when it comes to him. And I think another guy, and I don't know if you want to bring him up, but Anton Wahlberg, there's another guy, right? The Swedish team had a lot of players who emerged late in the year. Earlier in the year, we was all the, okay, it's Theo Lindstein, it's Noah Dauer Nielsen, it's, you know, it's those guys, it's Kali Carlson is the name who's completely disappeared off the map, right? Those were the guys who were thought to be the top of this Swedish group, the Swedish age group. And then now, later in the year, it's these interesting physical tool guys like Edstrom and Wahlberg who have just kind of shot up rankings because they've improved so much, right? And Wahlberg is another guy that I expect could be a first round pick, kind of similar to Philip Bystad last year.
You've been listening to Brock Otten of McKean's Hockey. Make sure to follow him on Twitter. Make sure to follow McKean's on Twitter. Make sure to subscribe if you have the opportunity, because we're all asking you to subscribe, obviously, but really, really good work. I got a crash course in prospect evaluation last year by Brock, and it keeps lingering on. And it's really, really, I really, really appreciate you having the time and taking the time to talk to us. I'm gonna put this one on you just for the sake of it, because you are an OHL scout, and there is a certain player in Montreal, or two certain players that just came out of the playoffs there. Obviously, Owen Beck and Logan Mayo. Quick thoughts before we finish this one off.
Yeah, so Owen Beck, he had a pretty mediocre run with Peterborough. I think we all expected him to do a lot better with the Peets. And that's not to say he played poorly. But I don't think that he took that next step offensively this year that a lot of us sort of expected he would. And I'm kind of hoping that Montreal does not rush him. He's the kind of guy that could easily slide into Montreal's lineup next year as a fourth line center. He's very advanced for his age off the puck. He's a great defensive player already. The skating will play already. The faceoff ability will play already. He could play on Montreal's probably first or second PK easily. But at what cost, right? If Montreal does that and he's playing sort of that fourth line center role next year, does that hinder his growth as an offensive player in the future, right? I think this is a guy that needs to play all of next year in the OHL. It wouldn't be with Peterborough the whole year. They're going to be rebuilding, so he'll get dealt to a contender sometime probably like midway through the year, and that'll be really good for him to experience another playoff run. But just to gain confidence in how he can use his speed to his advantage from an offensive perspective, how he can find ways to get open to use his shot, because that's another asset. Just finding that next level as an offensive player, I think, is going to be really important for his development. So while I do expect him, and I think everybody in the OHL loop expects him to get a little bit of time to start the year with Montreal, I'm kind of hoping that they don't rush his development and do send him back at some point. Maybe
we need Owen Beck on it. We don't need Owen Beck. Mark, not so good.
Yeah. And Mayu is what he is. So Mayu is still a project. He had a really good year.
He was an overage or more or less as well. So
he was only 19 this year. He was an OA. Yeah, so he could technically return as an OA next year. He's going to turn pro. That's inevitable. There's no way that Montreal sends him back. He'll be in the AHL or wherever next year. Mm-hmm. But he's a very good offensive defender. The tools are fantastic from an offensive perspective. He is somebody that can have an impact on the offensive game in a lot of different ways. His high-end shot, his skills, his ability to lead the attack in transition. He consistently beats the first layer of pressure. Defensively, there's still those gaffes. He just picks the wrong guy to guard, or he's coming back in transition after taking a chance offensively, and he's not really doing anything. And sometimes he chases the puck still, or he chases the big hit. And there's still that sort of erratic defensive play that I think could lead to him getting a little bit eaten alive or exposed at the NHL level. I think that the physical and athletic tools are definitely there. He still has an extremely high upside, but I think that he's going to need some time. I think that this is a player that's going to need a year or two in the minors before he's ready for an NHL job. I think that there's another guy you don't want to rush, because there is upside at both ends. It's just that with all the time that he's missed, there's a lot of development, we'll say even off the ice, probably still that needs to occur before he's ready to take on that role. I'll give you a little tidbit though. So as part of my job with the Hockey News and doing an OHL podcast for them, we've had a lot of players on over the year. And one of the players that we had on spoke to the fact that he and a lot of the other players in the league sort of had a chat about who they felt were the best defensemen in the OHL and the player that they felt was sort of the hardest to play against. Mm. And Mayu was one of the top names that came up. So obviously he does have the respect of the players in the OHL in terms of being difficult to play against. It's just finding more consistency in his decision-making, in my opinion.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you on. I'm sure I'll be having you on for the top 25, under 25, and not just lean on Matei Derai all the time. But it's been enlightening, to say the least, Brock. And please follow Brock Otten at Brock Otten for McKean's Hockey. And I know he's a great guy, and as you already heard, obviously, but ask him a question on Twitter, and he will definitely get back to you with an answer. It might take a day, but he will get back to you. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Brock, for being part of this podcast.
My pleasure, man.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.